You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Jeff Eason of the Blowing Rocket, Fred Mills of Blurt Online. Today, we're talking about some of our favorite box sets, a little bit of the history of how they came to be, where they stand today, and a little bit of recent news for one of the great manufacturers of this form, Rhino Records, who has gone through a bit of upheaval of late.
Well, that it is timely, a timely discussion. Yeah, back in September, it was announced that these massive layoffs were going down at Rhino. Now, Rhino, for people that don't know, is based out in Burbank, California, and they basically are the curators and administrators, for lack of a better term, of the massive vaults of Warner Brothers and Atlantic Records, the whole WIA music group, which means they've got access to music going back to the, you know, like the 40s. You know, the entire Atlantic soul era is under their domain, and then all the great Warner Brothers albums that you've known and loved over the years. Neil Young is just one artist that potentially, if Neil were not doing his own archives, Rhino would be the ideal people to step in and do it. Well, it was announced that all these layoffs were going down, and essentially Rhino's changing their business model. Going into kind of moving away from a strict archival and reissue direction and into marketing and licensing. As I was telling Jeff earlier, there's probably more money in licensing an old Aretha Franklin song to a film than there is doing an Aretha Franklin reissue.
And Rhino's always been a little bit of ahead of the curve, so it doesn't surprise me that they're in survival mode and they've found different ways of making it work. If you not familiar with Rhino, they were kind of on the cutting edge in the 80s and early 90s. When everybody was switching over from vinyl albums to CDs, they were the ones that really kind of put together some really good packages of the older material, archival material, and put them on CD collections. And as such, were the first ones to put out some of these really, really great box sets.
And that's kind of why we're here. It may be premature to say a eulogy for box sets, but I think this is kind of a canary or maybe several canaries in the coal mine moment because, as we all know, a lot of people's musical consumption habits are changing, going towards more digital, getting MP3s and even getting liner notes in PDF or JPEG form. And so these elaborate box sets where with expensive packaging and just deluxe booklets with tons of photos and liner notes and everything – they may be about to go the way of the dinosaur. Just to backtrack a little bit, box sets, CD, and I'm talking CD box sets, there were actually LP box sets going all the way back, too. I've got some old great Atlantic and Motown box sets on LP, and I remember one of the first ones that I became aware of as being really cool beyond just being an anthology was Nick Drake's Fruit Tree box.
Oh, yeah.
Because it had a whole bonus LP of unreleased material. And so how cool was that? You can buy the box and get stuff that you couldn't get anywhere else. And that became kind of the hallmark of boxes as we moved into the CD era. Some of the first big ones were Eric Clapton's Crossroads and then the Allman Brothers Dreams box, which were kind of modeled after the old LP boxes because you would have an LP-sized box, LP-shaped box, and then in it you'd open up the lid and there would be four CD jewel cases in there plus a big booklet. And all of a sudden, you've got like, you know, well, if each CD can hold 70 minutes worth of music, you've got 280 minutes worth of music. And of course, they can pack rarities and live material and demos and singles, B-sides, and everything like that. And pretty soon, people began to expect this. You know, if it's an, you know, heritage artist with a lot of back catalog, well, people want more. They want to hear all the vault stuff.
The first one I remember hearing, my dad bought the and it was only a two-disc box set, but it was really nice packaging, was for Robert Johnson, and it was complete. It had everything that he ever recorded. And
That was one of the first big-selling box sets. It was a total runaway success for Columbia, I believe. They followed that up with the Birds box set, and that was another one. And those were actually high watermarks, too, because that was the first time that the companies shrunk it down to a smaller size as opposed to the big 12 by 12 box. Mm-hmm. And so now you could start to get these things to fit on your shelves rather than file them away with your LPs. And then pretty soon they got shrunk down to more of a oversized book thing. The Bob Marley box set and the Police box set, I think, were the next big ones where you had it folded out and you had the little trays embedded on the packaging and everything, as opposed to a jewel box. And then pretty soon you had things shrunk down to almost CD size, and then you started having elaborate packaging. I brought one along with me. I brought this one that Rhino did back in the 90s, late 90s, Beg, Scream, and Shout, the big old box of 60s soul. And if anybody's ever seen it, it's just a throwback delight. It's like an old 45 carrying case. You open it up, and there's a little booklet, liner notes in the form of trading cards for each artist, and then each little facsimile of a 45 RPM record sleeve you slide out, and inside is the CD. And so it's, you know, things like that. Well, Rhino even put out a compilation of girl groups shaped in the form of a women's hat box, which may be a little extreme. It's kind of hard for me to fit that on my record shelf, but as a collector and kind of a geek, it just, you know, makes you just kind of go, oh, that's so cool. But then, like I said, those are not cheap to manufacture, are they?
No, but they look better under the Christmas tree than a bunch of MP3s.
This is true. This is true.
A little card with a download.
I mean, for me, I think the real key to a good box set is, like you said with Nick Drake, is the rarities, the things that you don't already have. Because you obviously you're appealing to the fan of that particular artist who probably has most, or if not all, of the regular issues by that particular group or artist. One of my favorite box sets was the Hank Williams box set that Joe and I were talking about just a few minutes ago, because it had all of these rarities. I mean, just when you think you've heard everything that Hank Williams ever did, here comes this box set with just unearthed treasures.
Yeah, all broadcast, and they sat around and were rediscovered. It's like, hey, the radio station actually rediscovered this material and said, well, okay, so this is all, we're really not going to be able to use this. And long story, it finally came to being published after having sort of been bootlegged at one point, and there was some legal wrangling. But wonderful radio broadcasts from Hank Williams' heyday, when a lot of his hits were brand new and a lot of material that you won't get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Songs that just didn't exist before, you know, that he had sung, gospel numbers, traditional things that he never went into the studio to record, but did sing on his radio shows and just happened to be recorded by the radio station.
And it's not always just the popular artist and the icons that get the box set treatment. Just recently, Big Star, kind of the cult pop band from the early 70s that spawned Alex Chilton, they came out with a great box set, not so ironically, on Rhino, called Keep an Eye on the Sky. It's a four-disc set, just loaded with rarities and an incredible booklet. It's nicely packaged. It's like almost like an oversized 45 RPM box. Another one, talk about obscure, The Midnighters, the East L.A. garage soul Latin rock band from the mid to late 60s. The Complete Midnighters, Songs of Love, Rhythm, and Psychedelia. A label called Microworks put this out. It's a four-CD box that covers their entire recorded output, their four albums plus almost an album's worth of rarities and B-sides and stuff. So it just became a great format to access this stuff in, and in a sense, you know, kind of pay tribute to both, you know, like I said, deserving unknowns like the Midnighters and Big Star, and icons like Hank Williams.
Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite box sets, they don't just highlight individual artists or bands, but they highlight labels. Some of these smaller label box sets are just treasures. Like there's one called The History of Northern Soul, which is the Northern Soul label from up in England that carried all kinds of various blues and soul artists at the time.
Here's one of my favorites of late. It's the Woody Guthrie My Dusty Road collection, and it's housed in a suitcase, appropriately enough.
That's cool.
And the neat take on this is, you know, who hasn't heard everything from Woody Guthrie? Well, this is all material from the mid-40s that was rediscovered on the original Metal Master. So the sound quality is far better. It's 54 tracks on four discs, and they've grouped it thematically, you know, hits, as well as Woody the Agitator is the title of one disc, and also a disc of material with Cisco Houston and Sonny Terry, which has a lot of really fun numbers, and we've been playing that. Woody Guthrie, who, well, he's got so much poetry, people just keep putting it to music, but I really enjoyed hearing this box set.
Well, the people that put these things together are curators and archivists, but they're lovers of music, too, and there is a certain aesthetic component that goes into presenting these things and doing it in a handsome and reverential and even kind of collector catnip kind of manner, you know, putting it in a suitcase or putting this collection of funk and soul in a old 45 RPM carrying case. There's even a category for packaging at the Grammys that Rhino consistently wins year after year. It almost became, well, what's Rhino going to come out with this year? Because they're almost like a shoo-in for the Grammys. I remember one year, people may remember seeing this, it was called Brain in a Box. It was something that Rhino put out.
The sci-fi.
It was a collection, like a four-disc set of sci-fi and weird, you know, theme music. It's almost like a novelty collection, but it definitely had sci-fi as its theme. And it had this picture of a holographic brain, you know, the lobes and folds of a human brain on this holographic image that was pasted onto the cover. It would catch your attention from all the way across a record store. So you know the people, when they were making this, they were just saying, oh, this is over the top, this is over the top. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Because they can. But here we're circling back to the whole problem. Well, Rhino obviously was putting too much money into these for the actual return they were getting. And I'm curious. I mean, people out there listening, are you getting your music digitally these days? Are you still buying CDs? Are you downloading? If so, is there even a space on your record shelf for this elaborate, oversized box set? Or is it just easier for you to, you know, download it, you know, from iTunes and not worry about ancillary things such as liner notes and photos and stuff?
Well, the box sets, I think, are going to suffer from everyday use because they are sort of like a museum piece.
They're also going to suffer from the decline of the neighborhood record store, because it's when you see them on the shelf that you really think, oh, this would be great to have.
Yeah, yeah.
You see it on an Amazon page, and it doesn't quite do the same thing for you.
I remember years ago I was interviewing a guy from the Rhino Handmade label. Handmade was an imprint of Rhino in which they kind of continued the whole collector aesthetic with box sets and deep archival digging projects, but they issued them in numbered limited editions. They thought that perhaps it wouldn't sell enough to really justify pressing up 10,000 copies, but they could do 2,000 limited numbered editions of, say, a Monkees box set, knowing that there's at least 2,000 Monkees fans out there. And then they made some great productions. The guy that I was talking to, he went by the name of Mr. Hand. Everybody knew who he really was, but he didn't want his real name publicized. He said that their whole business was sort of based on the old bootleg model when bootlegs started coming out, starting with maybe Dylan's Great White Wonder and unreleased material that nobody had heard, that the collectors and fans just went crazy about and a buzz about it. All of a sudden, fans can hear this stuff that was not meant to ever be released. Well, soon bootleggers came into the mix and issuing live and unreleased studio material by everybody from Dylan to the Stones to the Beatles to the Who to Springsteen. When all these Beatles unreleased tracks came out in the mid to late 80s, Unsurpassed Masters, it caused an uproar, and that directly led to the Beatles eventually by the mid-90s going into their vaults and coming up with their reissue series. So all these things come into play, and we know that there's material in the vaults and that artists always have unreleased stuff, but it may come down to a situation where instead of your Rhinos and your Sony Legacies of the world coming out with box sets, the artists themselves will just simply be making them available either in download fashion or as these limited edition CDs that they sell directly. So again, I think we're sort of at a crossroads with this kind of thing we're talking about.
Well, artists like Radiohead and Trent Reznor have already taken that ball and run with it very successfully,
exactly,
producing their own high-end collections of personal autographs, etc.
The Pixies just put out their Minotaur box, which is a super deluxe reissue of all their stuff. I think it goes for like $250 or something that obviously only a hardcore fan is going to get, but there are enough of those hardcore fans. And plus, what they do in a lot of instances is take pre-orders and then create a number that roughly corresponds with the number of pre-orders they get, plus a few more. So they know they're not going to get stuck with 1,000 copies of something sitting under their bed.
Hey, and then they hold on to a few for themselves for later.
Hey, eBay. So that may be the new model, you know, whereas Rhino, it wasn't necessarily possible for Rhino to create this elaborate box set and do it like Trent or Radiohead or the Pixies, where they know what automatically have a gauge of their fan base because they've got email lists and what have you. Maybe it'll be a label such as Rhino that adopts this model and is able to kind of keep the box set aesthetic going. I hope so, because I'm a collector, although my wife sometimes wishes I didn't have all these things clogging up the shelves, because they could probably be put to better use.
What do you think? Email us whatitis@wncw.org. What box sets are in your collection? We'll recap our week's conversations with your email on a Friday. For WNCW, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Jeff Eason and Fred Mills. Until next time.